The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
It is the Answer of the Week. We're doing it again. I apologize, guys. Life got in the way of the show this week, but we'll be back with another one next week. Enough of that talk. Right now, we're playing...
Let's not dwell in the past.
I totally agree.
We're living in the now.
We're playing the Answer of the Week, and here's how it works. Every week, Joe Patrick puts the question of the week up on the Two-Headed Nerd forum. You can find it by going to twoheadednerd.com. There's a forum button. It'll take you right there. It's awesome. Little section. Question of the week.
Don't go to the twoheadednerd.com. It's a totally different website.
Yeah, you don't even want to see that. Trust me.
No way.
When you go there, you can write all you want. Or you can call us at 402-819-4894. Or you can send us an email with your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com, answering the question, this one specifically. Joe Patrick, reset it for us.
This week's question came from Jim Kettner. He is ex-Kettnerd-X on the forums.
We affectionately call him Kettnerd here.
Kettnerd, yeah. And I believe that you kind of changed the wording of his question. In fact, he said as much in the forums.
Yeah, we adjusted it so it would work, but it's still his.
Except for all of the meaning that you took out of it and inserted of your own.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So this week's question is basically about war stories. Favorite war comic, favorite war story, favorite comic book war. Like if you don't have a, if you don't necessarily have a single issue to pinpoint, but you really love Operation Galactic Storm.
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. What was the... Never mind. I don't want to steal anyone's answer. Let's get right into it. Let's do it. Let's start with Jeffrey Ketchum. We like to call him Jeffrey Ketchum All.
JD gotta catch them all.
Pardon me, JD gotta catch them all. That's right. He doesn't want to catch them all. He's got to catch them all. That's
responsibility.
A responsibility.
Greetings, Two-Headed Nerd. This is your reluctant Pokemon trainer. JD gotta catch them all, emailing in my answer for the question of the week. Civil War is a big topic in comics right now. With the Marvel Cinematic Universe version, Marvel's Civil War II coming out. But my favorite Civil War is the second American Civil War from Brian Wood and Ricardo Bertelli's DMZ. A war between the U.S. government and the Free States Army, loosely comprised of Midwestern militia groups protesting rampant U.S. adventurism overseas. The most compelling thing for me about this war is Brian Wood doesn't depict any one side as right. Also, despite being written over a decade ago, its sentiment is still relevant in today's political climate. Scary stuff. Cheers, nerds.
DMZ was so good.
That's a kick-ass answer.
Oh, I love that book. And he's right. They sent this reporter in to the demilitarized zone to figure out what was going on there. And in the process, he kind of found out that the people he worked for were just as like propagandist as the other side. And both sides are totally screwed. And man, wonderful, wonderful book.
Never read it.
Of course you didn't.
DMZ.
Next up, our very own D. Murray. We didn't hear from him for like 2 weeks, right?
Hey, not every question's a winner.
That's true. That's true. And life gets in the way. It got in our way. What can you do?
That's right.
Take it away, D.
Hey, man. You got any cool, like, war stories? You know, I just saw that Civil War movie, and it was so fucking boss, man. It was really fucking cool. I loved it. Yeah. Have you ever actually read the Civil War comic book? Yeah, man, I read that with like Captain America doing his thing on his side, got all the people and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty cool. All right, have you read Kingdom Come? It's not really a war story, but we got a lot of battles inside of it. Yeah, dude, I have read that. Like with the cool art, what's his name? Ross something. I can't remember. Alice Ross. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's a pretty cool one. Have you read the Infinite Crisis? You read that one? Oh, with Superboy Prime, dude, he busts open the wall to the world. Love it, man. I freaking love it. All right. You seen the Batman versus Superman? Oh, dude, I saw it. I saw it. You saw Superman, Batman, all evil and junk.
I love that he's having a conversation with his, like, more stoned out self.
Yeah, dude. All right. Since you like that movie, I got a comic book for you. You've heard of Absolute Power by Jeff Loeb and Carlos Pacheco? Nah, dude, I haven't heard of that. I haven't heard of that at all. Well, it takes place during the pre-52 story. It's the Superman-Batman run. And it's issue number 15. You see Superman crash land in Kansas and Batman right after his parents die. And Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, and Saturn Girl, they gather up these two kids and trained them to take over the entire Earth. What? No way, dude. Yeah, they're pretty evil. And they have Wonder Woman trying to stop them, and they have no other than Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters trying to take them down. What? No way. Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much for you, but it's an entire run by itself, so this isn't just the one story inside of it. It has actually like five parts to it. This is just one story inside that entire trade, but Uncle Sam gets a Green Lantern ring. He turns into a Green Lantern. What? Okay, I'm reading this comic book. I'm getting it right now, dude. I appreciate your help. I'm going to grab this comic book and take off. Take it easy. Yeah, you're welcome, buddy.
Why don't I remember this?
It was the second... No, it was the third volume of Jeff Loeb's Superman Batman. So it was after the Supergirl arc.
Okay. God, I just don't remember. I have no memory of this.
Yeah, and it was a time... an alternate universe kind of time-altering story where the Legion of... point of order, D... It was the Legion of Supervillains, not Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Saturn Girl from the Legion of Superheroes. This was Lightning Lord, Saturn Queen, and Cosmic King. All right, they're bad guys.
Okay, I don't know if I read this. I think I may have bailed by that point.
Yeah, basically they snatch Superman and Batman up at the point of their origins. So right after Superman lands and right after the Waynes get murdered, and then they raise them to be like overlords. And so history has changed. And so all of the superheroes are freedom fighters. It's a great story. Carlos Pacheco art. It's wonderful. It's amazing.
I do like Carlos Pacheco. He's a badass. I don't think I ever read that. Absolute Power. I might have checked it out.
Yeah, that's a good answer, D.
So Uncle Sam became a Green Lantern.
I don't remember that part. That I mean, I'm sure D is right that happens. It's been years since I've read it.
I still have no idea what Uncle Sam's powers even are. I don't get it.
He has his power is fueled by the collective patriotic belief of the people of the United States.
Like Gladiator, he is to the people of the United States what Gladiator is to the Shire.
Right, right. So okay. Like when people are feeling like,
or Shi'ar, however you say it, I don't know.
You know, very proud of the American spirit and you know, picking themselves up by their bootstraps and helping their neighbor.
They can't
neighbor
wait for Donald Trump to make America great again. Like they're all excited.
Right. Uncle Sam gets stronger. And when America is in this like very fiercely protective mood, like we've been attacked and we're at war or whatever, then Uncle Sam tends to transform into this much more oddly cosmic superhero character called the Patriot.
Oh boy.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it sounds complicated.
He's got all kinds of crazy powers.
D, thank you for your call, brother. That was some serious play acting. You in a stoned version of yourself. I kind of liked it. It was good. Right now, let's get sexy. My man, Jason Sexier.
Jason Sachs here, at Jason Sachs on the Twitters, the official THN comic book historian with a look at one of the greatest war comics creators ever. My favorite genre of comics, actually, is the war comic. There's nothing quite as well suited for the comic book page as the raw power and intensity of a war story. And there's never been a better line of war comics than Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat in the 1950s. In a few short years, Harvey Kurtzman, the creative writer, artist, and general auteur behind EC's Sublime War Comics, produced a body of material that is so spectacular, so perfectly realized, and driven by such a specifically clear vision of pure comic art. The stories are still considered to be some of the most brilliant war comics ever published, 60 years after they were first printed. Kurtzman's stories are great because they're driven by an intense passion for realism, combined with an astonishing storytelling sense and a deeply personal and idiosyncratic artistic style. Some of his stories are still deeply memorable today. Rubble, for example, about the destruction of ancestral Korean homeland, is just such a sad, tragic, and deeply moving story about war. His acknowledged masterpiece is a transcendent Big If, in which Kurtzman takes his techniques to a whole new level of mastery. This tale is one of the finest comic stories ever created. A piercing, existential consideration of pain and fear and the massive, capricious inhumanity of war, all drawn in a bravura, kinetic, raw art style that makes the reader feel the sheer pain, stress, and unadulterated panic, just as the deeply broken character at the center of the story feels it. A collection of these stories was published a couple years ago by Fantagraphics under the name Corpse of the Imjin. Must read.
I don't know for sure, but I think Sexier might be trying to take your Scrabble title. Did you hear how many $10 words he threw in there?
I mean, I barely understood it.
Wow. Two-Fisted Tales, Harvey Kurtzman. Yeah, that is some super famous stuff. Really important. I don't have the Fantagraphics one. I have a different reprint of some Two-Fisted Tales, the hardcover thing that it came out. I think it was like IDWEC did it a while ago. I can't remember. I'll have to look.
I don't know.
But I definitely have them because it was a friend of ours that used to come into the comic shop we worked at. It's like, you've got to buy this. You have to read this. It is absolutely incredible stuff. Bob Beerbohm, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Robert Bob Beerbohm.
Yes, man. And they are amazing stuff. That's a great call, Sexier. Thank you, brother. We appreciate it.
I think Jason knows who Bob Beerbohm is.
Of course he does. Bob Beerbohm is famous. Like, he is legitimately famous. Bob Beerbohm,
in the comic industry, he's infamous.
He is legitimately infamous. If he goes to comic conventions and walks around, people are like, you, Bob Beerbohm, like, they know who he is, you know.
I miss that f-ing guy.
I do too. I love that guy. I talk to him on Facebook every once in a while. It's so weird.
Yeah, he got super sick. He had a stroke,
but he's doing way better.
He's recovering. Yes,
yeah, he's doing way better. Let's go to our first voicemail call, shall we? John, it's Brian Givens. I don't know who this is. Might be somebody new. Might be new.
Brian DuPont, maybe.
Hey, Joe Nance. Brian DuPont calling in my answer to the question of the week. I've just started reading Usagi Yojimbo in the collected volumes that Dark Horse has been putting out. And in there is this story of General Akita. And General Akita is this guy with his characteristic on his face is he's got this really huge mustache that goes all the way over his mouth and down by his chin, but he leaves his chin open. The kind of mustache that, you know, like two kind of guys have. Either you're a really tough biker guy or you're in charge of a Japanese samurai army. So anyway, General Akita, his army loses, and he and two other men go and they hide in a farm. And General Akita decides to bide his time and just lay low and hoping that the lord that he was fighting would lose or die at some point, and then he could take over. And so it's that kind of story. But then he struggles to live on this farm, and tough times comes, and then his friend that he was with dies, and he buries him, and then he ends up meeting a woman, and he gets married, and he has a couple of kids, and then one of those children dies in the storm. And at the end of the story, one of his loyal soldiers comes and finds him after years of this gone on. And he shows up and he tells General Akita that the lord he was fighting has died, and now is the time to rise up and take power. But General Akita Although he wants his revenge, he realizes that he has far more important things now to live for, and he pretends that he is no longer General Akita.
So the great thing
about that I like about this is Sam Sakai does a fantastic job of telling this story, and he uses very little words in this entire story. So it starts off as a beautiful war story, and then it turns out to be the life story of this man. So that's my answer. I'll see you guys later. Thanks.
Brian DuPont is so right. Usagi Yojimbo is wonderful. And that storyline, it is a story about a samurai rabbit in an anthropomorphic world with a bunch of other animals. But it's so heavy and well-written and well-drawn. Everyone should go back and read Usagi Yojimbo from the beginning. It is a wonderful book. That's a great answer, DuPont.
Can't I go one fucking day without hearing somebody mention Usagi Yojimbo to me?
Do you want to say your catchphrase?
Haven't read it.
Yeah, there you go. Joe, haven't read it. Patrick, there you go. Sorry, no superheroes in Usagi Yojimbo, so I skipped it.
Though I do have the dual volume slipcased 10th anniversary hardcover.
Why have you not read that? You will burn through it. You could read that seriously.
Bequeathed to me by our friend Jason from Legend Comics and Coffee.
I've got it too. It is a wonderful hardcover edition, and they're so good. Shame on you. Let's go to Randy Andrews. We had a little back and forth here.
That's because Randy emailed and he said, well, it's a little later than I wanted it to be, but you posted the question late, so it is what it is.
Fair enough.
And I said, Randy, Matt posted the question on Sunday as usual, and you got your answer in a full day before the deadline. What do you want from us?
I'm curious. His quote at the bottom of his email, what is this from? Good against.
Is it from Ender's Game?
Good against remotes is one thing. Good against the living, that's something else. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Let's Google it real quick.
Well, good. Let's listen to his answer first. Randy Andrews.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week you asked about what your favorite comic book war is. Well, guys, I have to go with the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. It is an all-out war of so many characters warring against the Mad Titan himself, Thanos. Yes, I know it hasn't been made yet into a film, but the comic stands out as the ultimate superhero war against the ultimate villain. Well, that's my answer this week, guys. Hope you liked it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net, and my music this week is from Guardians of the Galaxy called Sanctuary by Tyler Bates. See you in a week. Bye for now.
It's a great answer.
Are you ready,
Andy?
Are you ready to feel real f-ing stupid?
Yeah.
Good against remotes is one thing. Good against the living is another. Is what Han Solo says to Luke Skywalker when he's doing a lightsaber laser practice with that little flying drone.
Yeah, when he's fighting the Rubik's Cube or whatever it is. That's right. Oh, man. I do feel like a jackass. Randy.
Can't believe we didn't know that.
That's a really solid answer. Infinity Gauntlet. That was certainly a war. It looks like that's where the Avengers movies are going. Like, it looks like
we're
going to the Infinity War. I mean, it looks insane. I can't wait.
It's gonna be bonkers.
And, of course, that's how they're gonna tie in the Guardians, right? I mean, that has to be how we do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go to the guy that had the question, Ketnerd himself.
Hey, Joe and Matt, Ketnerd here.
A little balance.
Well, guys, when I posted this question in the forums, I was definitely thinking more about the big superhero type conflicts, but when it came time to come up with an answer, I found myself going in a different direction. We don't talk about nonfiction comics too often on this show, but it is a nonfiction comic that was without question the most affecting work in the genre I've ever read, particularly because this one comic provided real insight into the family struggles of one of my good friends. In the early aughts, my friend Tamara and I had a sort of informal comic book club. We would each trade one of our favorite comics the other had never read, and then report back the following week to nerd out about Captain America, Hellboy, you name it. But the vibe of our discussions took on a whole new weight when Tamara lent me a book called Safe Area Garajda by Joe Sacco. Now, if you've never heard of Joe Sacco, he's a comics journalist, and his books compile months of on-the-ground reporting and even more meticulous research to bring stories to life on the comics page. In Safiyar Garajda, Sacco reports on the close of the Bosnian War in the mid-90s. Now, this was a subject I was painfully ignorant of, despite being in high school when it all went down. And this was the same conflict that had caused my friend's family to flee Sarajevo and come to the United States in the early 90s. The narrative details Sacco's four-month stay in Garajda, a UN-designated safe area, smack in the middle of a war zone. Spoiler alert, it was anything but safe. Sacco is able to weave his own story of a foreigner in the middle of a very dangerous, ethnically divisive civil war with the chilling firsthand stories of the Bosniak refugees, who he pays incredible tribute to with some of the most brutal cartooning I've ever seen. Safiyar Garajda is the story of human beings living through an incredibly trying, often heartbreaking situation. It's hard to get through, but I'll always love it because it helped me better understand my friend and better understand what comics are capable of.
Just for you that out there that don't know, you know, Bosnian, Gorazda, G-O-R-A-Z-D-E. It is an amazing book, and Joe Sacco is an amazing creator. He also did a book called Footnotes in Gaza and a book called The Fixer that I think you read.
No, but I've heard of it. I mean, I've heard of all these books.
I read The Fixer, and I loved it. Joe Sacco is incredible.
What's The Fixer again?
The Fixer took place in Sarajevo.
You know what? I didn't read that one.
Oh, my God. It was awful. I mean, like, amazing read, but just, like, hard to read. Everything Sacco did was very... It took place... most of it is Eastern European, and it took place in these war-torn areas. And it is not a fun read, and it's not the kind of read that's going to put you in a good mood, but they are amazing reads. I think he's won a few Eisners too. The guy is.
I'm sure he has.
I'm pretty sure.
Way to bring the room down, Kettner.
That's a fantastic answer, though.
You're talking about comic book war stories. I can't keep thinking about the Infinity Gauntlet with all this real world war going on. Yes. In fact, Safe Area Garajda won the Eisner Award for Best Original Graphic Novel in 2001.
There you go. Speaking of war, let's go to the Warbringer himself.
What's up, nerds? It's me. It's Talon the Warbringer, calling it with my answer of the week. What's the best war in comics? That's a silly question. It's World War II. That's the best war. That's the core of all comic books, and where everything came from. I mean, they exploded during that time. Even the wars inside of the comic. I mean, it unified everybody. And even in comics, I mean, children didn't know what was going on, but they were watching Captain America fighting Hitler's henchmen with Hydra, and they were watching Superman just uppercut the shit out of Hitler himself. So, there's never been anything else like it. And all of the stuff that was written back then is still in comics today, whether it's Hydra or, I mean, the core being of some of these characters,
Hitler,
to their very heart, just everything. So that's my answer, and we'll see you next time. Later.
He has a point in the sense
can't swing a dead cat without hitting a comic book about Hitler.
It's true. I mean, World War II is such a huge part. I mean, it's a big, I guess there's a lot of history in the DC universe, but I would argue it is a massive part of the Marvel universe.
Well, I mean, the thing is that all of that continuity is retroactive because those stories didn't really tie into anything back then.
No, but I mean, still,
except for the JSA, all tied together. That was the real thing that happened.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But like all that stuff about the invaders and the superhero teams of the time and,
all the way all up that to Ed Brubaker's Captain America. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but that all was invented in the 70s.
Oh, definitely. But still.
Well, I guess in to some degree in the 60s and like when Cap came back, but.
Well, but the point being that World War II is still a massive
certainly
part
it's,
of both the Marvel comic and film universe.
Yeah, certainly true. Well, I totally agree. That is a great answer. answer, and I don't want to like quickly move past it, but I have to read this joke that the Warbringer sent with his MP3.
Okay.
I repeated it at work, and it made me like the cubicle favorite for the entire day. People loved it so much.
I was hoping you would say I repeated it at work and I got fired.
No. Two muffins are in the oven.
Oh, God.
One turns to the other and says, God, it's hot in here. The other muffin turns and goes, holy shit, it's a talking muffin.
Yeah, that's really that's something. A dad. Yeah, that's. See, I'm not good at jokes. I'll be honest. I'm just not good at them.
And that is a dad joke.
I upset people every time they tell me a joke. I just kind of go, that's great. So, not a joke I would expect from a guy whose name is, you know, Warbringer, but hey.
Hey, look, you don't know. He's multifaceted.
Yeah, I'm not putting him in a box. He's the Warbringer.
I just want Warbringer to know that it was appreciated and not just by me.
Fair enough. You know who I appreciate? Our man on the street, Mr. Damon Chan.
Hey guys, Damon from Brooklyn, calling in from the mean streets of Manhattan once again to give you my answer to the question of the week regarding our favorite comic book wars. My answer comes from G.I. Joe, but not from the cartoon. Talking about the comic book, which was written by Larry Hama in the late 80s to the early 90s. And specifically, I'm calling out the Battle of Benzahin. Benzahin was a fictional country set in the Middle East, which was being invaded by Cobra at the time. And, you know, obviously they're in trouble and they call for the Joes to help. The only difference is Joes actually don't
like
win.
You do.
In fact, most of them lose their lives. I remember specifically Battle Force 2000, which was supposed to be like this futuristic group subsection of the Joes. They had a lot of toys on the shelves around that time. They were supposed to be like the army of the future or something like that. Anyway, they get blown to smithereens in one of the very first scenes of that battle. Later on, other famous Joes lose their lives. Doc, Thunder, Crankcase, they get executed in a pit by this crazy Saw Viper. He just mows them down with an M60. And Quick Kick also dies later on. And the other thing about these guys are that, you know, all these guys were kind of prominent in both the toy lines and the cartoon, which was very unusual. I mean, Larry Hama at this point had made G.I. Joe into a very militarized, realistic type of depiction of the Joes. But this is the first time that these major players were killed. I guess showed you that really when, you know, you go to war, no one's really safe. And yeah, that's the one that has always stood in my mind, the Battle of Benzahin of G.I. Joe. I'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.
That was an awesome story. And I totally forgot about that because they massacred Joes in that one. Just started killing G.I. Joe characters.
Had to make room for new toys. Damon put a page from that issue up on the forums with Battle Force 2000, just like totally getting their asses kicked.
Oh, they got massacred.
And I had like one of the characters in that page is named DJ.
Yeah.
He was the communications expert and he was like the first guy to bite it. And I had that figure. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, DJ.
Yeah, they killed Quick Kick, man. I remember Andy Kubert did the cover of that. It was like, I want to say it was G.I. Joe issue. It was like 110 through 113. I can't remember which one. Somewhere in there. Man, I loved that story. Because I feel like that was just at a point where Marvel was like, Larry, you can do whatever you want with G.I. Joe. It's just selling so well. Go nuts. Oh, good stuff. I love that answer, Damon. Thank you for your call. Good to hear you back on the street. I'm glad your injury, you know, you healed. We need you out there pounding the pavement. Let's go back to the Google voicemail.
And you played his second call, right?
I think so.
Where it said, whoops, I attached the wrong phone. Okay,
yeah. Oh, this is our mystery husband.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, honey, it's me. You know that I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Of course I know that.
Weird to talk about what our favorite war is, but thankfully, since we're talking about fictional wars, it's eased my mind a bit. I'd have to say my favorite one that I've ever read would be the Viltrumite War in Invincible. It was bloody, brutal, epic. Stakes were high. There were losses on all sides. It was just very intense and a great chapter in what I consider to be Kirkman's best comic. So, yeah. Can't wait to hear what you think about that, and I'll talk to you later. Love you. Bye.
I love you too, sweetie. I'll see you when you get home.
The stakes.
Oh, the Viltrumite War. Oh,
the stakes were high, and Kirkman was even higher.
Oh my God. You were saving that one up, weren't you?
I was. I wanted to make sure you heard it.
The Viltrumite War. Like, they ran out of red ink while they printed that one. It was crazy how bloody that was. Man, that was good stuff. Great answer, Mystery Husband.
God, that is a good answer. I love it.
But this is why our marriage is so great. He keeps it interesting. You know, after all these years, it's like we just met yesterday. You know,
he knows how to keep it lively.
He really does. Love that guy. Now, here's a guy who could take a couple notes from the Mystery Husband, the official THN bachelor, Chris Bockelder. He's not going to settle down. No. You kidding me?
Hey, Joe and Matt, it's your favorite THN bachelor. Heading back to Earth with the Star Sapphire Corp, who, woo! Well, frankly, they play the song everywhere they go. On loop. We are young. For hours. Anyway, this song, thinking about it, has really... I'm sorry, my mind is scattered. It's got me thinking about my favorite war in comics, and... quite frankly, I think it's the ongoing war in the pages of Saga. I know, at least from where I'm at right now, it's mostly in the backdrop, but I find it so interesting to see this giant war that's caused a Romeo and Juliet dynamic between the main characters, and I love seeing the robots' reaction to it. In fact, the world's reaction to it, and the fact that it's the backdrop to one of my favorite comics going right now, it really gives that universe just such a rich history, and you can really, I mean, you understand the political landscape because of the war going on, and you empathize with Alana and Marco, and you feel so bad for Hazel that this is what she's going to have to live with, but, I mean, I'm rambling right now. Honestly, I'm exhausted. I've heard this song so many times, and it's just, it's too much, and they keep prodding at me with the rings, and that's not okay. It's not okay. I know you're my ride home, but it's not okay. You need to stop. I'm a man. I'm not a machine. Help. Anyway, I should be back on Earth, hopefully, soon. That's my answer. The war going on in Saga. Thanks for everything. Bye for now.
He's not a piece of meat, ladies. He's got feelings and thoughts, goals and aspirations, all right? And my favorite thing about Chris Bockelder is when I write his name, it autocorrects to bachelor. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's like the universe wants him to be the bachelor.
But that also might be the secret origin of his nickname. I think it may have been autocorrect. It was like, no, that's not his name.
No, it was the Google transcript, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. No, you're probably right. Although I feel like we're giving the Google transcript a lot of props. Like it could have, because it was probably something much weirder, you know?
Well, let's address his answer real quick. That is a great answer.
Yeah. That's a fantastic answer.
The conflict in Saga that's driven these two peoples apart.
Well, and it's very much like a genocidal conflict where like both sides want to wipe each other out. It's not just, you know, like weird Star Wars conflict where the rebels are fighting the bet. No, this is like our race fucking hates your race and we are going to extinguish you.
Do you remember a while back when we both confessed that we had not read Saga in like over a year?
Yeah, but I caught up after that.
Not me. Yeah. I'm even farther behind than I was then.
Go ahead. Say your catchphrase one more time.
Haven't read it.
There you go.
Except I have read it. I've read it like I read like the first 24 issues.
We're still going to put that on your tombstone in 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
3 weeks from now, I'm going to put that on your tombstone.
Hey, you listen up, buddy. I have forgotten more things that I've read than I have ever not read.
Oh, please.
Or something like that.
I'm just saying, it seems like there's a lot of this going on lately. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Somehow, you know, I'm the guy that's read all this stuff. I'm just saying.
Read so many damn comics.
The shoe is on the other face now, sir.
What do you mean in 3 weeks you're going to put it on my tombstone?
It means I know something you don't know. Never mind. Let's go back to Google voicemail.
What?
Hi, Joe and Matt. This is Bobby calling in from Florida. I'm answering the question of the week regarding the favorite comic book war. I don't read comics too often anymore.
Time out. Bobby's a new guy, right?
For sure.
Bobby, welcome aboard. Awesome. We haven't had a new guy for a little while here. This is great. And I'm talking to you other new people that haven't called in yet. Call us. We want to hear from you. Just like Bobby, all right? Be like Bobby.
But I tend to lurk different pages and read about events. And if one grabs my attention, I'll end up picking up the graphic novels. One that happened pretty recently that really grabbed my attention was Jonathan Hickman's run on the Ultimates. I'd pretty much given up on the book after the third volume, but I kept reading about what was happening. And I liked what was happening with the Children of Tomorrow, about the group that was genetically modified by the Maker, gone through the thousands of years of evolution, locked in the dome until they decide to pretty much battle the world. I thought it was an enjoyable read, but I think the first half really stole the show with the Children of Tomorrow discovering Thor and bringing Ragnarok out on Asgard. That is a great read, and really to tie it up, I think the Maker being introduced was just a great thing. I think he's probably the best antagonist to come out of either of the big two comic companies in a while. So I guess that would really be my pick. I could have done without the Tony Stark's tumor outsmarting the city, but that is very enjoyable. So thanks, and enjoy your show.
See, I thought it was pretty cool when Tony Stark's boner outsmarted the city. I don't know. I thought that was awesome.
Tumor, man.
Oh,
tumor.
Sorry.
Tumor.
My bad. Bobby, welcome aboard, brother. Good to hear from you. I did not finish reading Hickman's Ultimates.
Oh, no. I bailed on the Ultimate Universe long before that.
Was the Maker?
I mean, I heard it was.
Was the Maker?
The Maker is Ultimate Reed Richards gone totally evil.
Okay. Okay, he was a guy, he wore like a helmet, and he was really weird looking.
Yeah, and he's in the main Marvel Universe now.
Yeah.
He was the villain in the first story arc of the new Avengers, the new series.
Right, he showed up. Okay, got it. Great call, Bobby.
Yeah, he was in Secret Wars.
He was the guy in the helmet.
The guy in the helmet, yeah.
Yes, okay. That's what I thought.
Reed Richards of the Ultimate Universe.
Spooky stuff. Turned out to be a good guy, though. Did the right thing.
No, he's still a very bad guy.
No, he turned out to be a good guy in that story.
Just because he doesn't want the universe to end, that doesn't make him a good guy. That just means he wants a place to live.
Okay, that's fair. But Reed and Reed work together. That's all I'm saying. So, you know.
Yeah, yes, you're right. But Reed has also worked together with Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom is a villain.
Right now, he's doing good stuff in the pages of Iron Man. He's being a pretty good guy.
I don't trust it.
Neither does Iron Man. And it's great. It's so fun. Let's check in with our buddy. Our contributor, our love slave from the north, the oldest listener contributor we have, our favorite senior citizen, Da Orca.
He's all of those things and more.
Orca here. Good thing I spent so much time crafting my heartfelt message to the youths of Omaha for you guys to play live at Free Comic Book Day, just so you could get all lazy and puss out. I know. Joe was busy drawing Come Catch a My Little Pony drawings, and Matt was searching for syphilis in the mouths of underage groupies in the bank parking lot out back. But I worked hard on that. I was also decent for a change. The good news is I have a whole lot of potty mouth built up for this week's answer. It's going to spew out Tourette style. So close your eyes and pull back your hair. This much of Da Orca is a bitch to clean up. The best f***ing war comic, and I'll hear no other s***-ass arguments, is George Pratt's 1990 graphic novel, Enemy Ace, War Idol. Pratt was a beautiful f***ing painter, and this story is so well crafted, it'll bring any good asshole nerd to tears. The two page spread in the second chapter of the dog fight belongs in a fucking museum. It's just fucking brilliant. The story is a conversation with several fucking flashbacks about the true cost of war between two veterans, one from World War I. Rest in peace, Uncle Hiram. Joe might not believe in you, but he's a peck of breath face. And another vet from Vietnam. Titbot. Great fucking action, some of the best goddamn eye in the fucking history of the medium, and a story so damn good it won an Eisner and a fucking Harvey. This book was so great and illustrated war so fucking well that for years it was required reading at West Point. No fucking shit. West fucking Point. So Garth Ennis and Nick Fury and Sergeant Rock can all go shit in each other's blue waffle twats. This is the winner. Ass titties. Whew, I'm spent. But I feel better. Kiss, kiss, boys.
I just broke my finger on the censor button. That was payback for us.
I need you to stop and recognize that it happened so fast that you will probably miss editing out the C word in the title of the book.
No, trust me, I'll get it.
Okay.
Enemy Ace, an amazing book. Absolutely amazing book. I have not read all of Enemy Ace, but I have read some choice stuff. And I read it was Garth Ennis and Chris, what's his name?
Chris Weston?
Yes, Garth
Ennis. But I don't think that's who did that.
I think that was. It was Ennis and Weston, I think, on that Enemy Ace relaunch. Or not relaunch, but like one shot. Let me look.
No, it was. Oh, all right.
I think it was two issues. It was like two issue prestige thing.
Oh, yeah, they were like square bound.
Yeah, it was Garth Ennis and Chris Weston. Those were amazing. Man. That guy, I'll tell you what. If cuss words were $100 bills, the Orca never has to work again.
We'd all be rich.
I'll tell you what. Good old Jesse Kiefer. He knows how to keep it clean, just like Sinbad. That's why I love him. Oh, goddamn time.
Joe and Matt, it's Jesse from GrawlixPodcast.com. I'm going old school. Likely no surprise here. I just gotta go Secret Wars because when I think about it, even though it was a glorified excuse for all the heroes to battle all the villains all at the same time, so much happened in that event that actually had an impact. Not like now when they say, oh, the Marvel Universe will never be the same. The DC Universe will never be the same. We got the origin of the Beyonder. We got a new Spider-Woman. We got Spidey with the alien costume, which ultimately became Venom. We got a She-Hulked Fantastic Four while the Thing remained on Battleworld. But maybe the number one reason why Secret Wars rules is that they gave us the best Marvel superhero action figures of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, maybe they were the only ones at that time. I don't know.
And
but what
sucked.
I do know is I had a bunch of them, and they were my absolute favorite. And that wouldn't have been possible without the Secret Wars. So there it is. Secret Wars. It's my answer, guys. Have a great week.
I loved the Secret Wars action figures.
Incorrect.
So freaking much.
DC Superpowers action figures are far superior.
Yeah, well,
because they had like super action moves.
Were they before or after, though?
Same time period, dude.
Okay, because he was saying they were first. Let's look. Let's look.
No, it was around the same time.
We're gonna take a little time out. We're gonna look. They both came out in 1984. There we go. It's a tie.
I know.
I like the Secret Wars figures more, just because I was a bigger Marvel guy back then.
I mean, that's fair. I get it. But I remember
the Conqueror figure. Oh, I loved that Kang figure. It was so cool. And they had like the shields with the lenticular stuff on them. It was so dumb.
Yeah, that revealed their secret identities.
Yeah, which like, what good is that? Like, oh yeah, oh, watch out, block that with your shield. Like, wait a minute, Peter Parker is Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, good catch. Whoa!
So dumb. But he's right. He brings up an interesting point. Back in the day when they did Secret Wars, or I would just argue back in the day, in the 80s, when they would do stuff like this, they never said stupid shit
Like, the Marvel Universe will never be. It just changed.
No, they probably did.
Things just changed. That's just how
it went. They probably didn't market it like that because there was no internet.
Right. And it wasn't so event driven. It was just like, here's this thing that's happening and it's going on like this, you know, and your other comics will still come out and kind of ignore this at the same time. But then they'll all pay attention to it afterwards.
Yeah, it's weird. There's a weird cliffhanger in one issue of Amazing Spider-Man. He goes onto the Beyonder ship in his normal costume in Amazing Spider-Man 251.
Right.
And then in Amazing Spider-Man 252, it's a year later and he jumps out wearing a black outfit.
Well, there you go.
the ship is back in Central Park from Battle World.
He's just like, whoa, that was crazy.
What a strange year it's been, or however long it was for them. I don't know.
Right. Well, and to be fair, the Secret Wars like happened outside of time too, right? So they didn't even disappear.
I don't think it was meant to take place over the course of an actual calendar year.
But I mean, like, it happened in, you know, Secret Wars. We'll call it. It was like Battle World or whatever, and like it was outside of time and space. So Peter was like, "I was gone for a year." They're like, "What are you talking about? You just walked out of the room." You know,
I don't recall that, and I feel like that's something that requires fact-checking.
Okay, maybe I'm throwing that in there.
Because I don't remember anybody's commenting about, like, how long he was or was not missing.
Okay.
No, because the entire f***ing city of Denver disappeared off the face of the earth.
Why
Denver? And the Molecule Man had to fly it back.
From where?
Yeah, it wasn't like from Battle World.
Oh, it was like Battle World is a place in space?
Battle World was made up of chunks of a bunch of different planets, just like in the modern Secret Wars.
Okay, I thought it was outside of, like, space and time.
Beyonder is from outside space and time.
Nope, he's an Inhuman.
Nope.
Rejected. Sorry, buddy. Brian Michael Bendis rewrote that for us.
I reject that.
So every time our friend Jeff Hitt calls us, the Google transcript really wants to call him Jeff Head. And I think we just have to give him some weird head nickname, you know, like the head.
Well, I don't mind calling him Jeff Head.
Jeff Head? Yeah, let's just...
He's a real Jeff Head.
He's a bad guy. I'll tell you what. Let's go to Jeff Head. Let's see what he's got.
Hey, guys. Calling in Jeff Head, calling with the question of the week. And the question to do with favorite comic book war. And, my favorite comic book war is actually Galactic Storm. And I'm not ashamed of it. Marvel big crossover for the Avengers that I collected. I went out and bought every issue of the West Coast Avengers and the regular Avengers, and it had characters from the X-Men who I already knew. It had characters I didn't know into Kree, and it was just great. I loved every minute of it. It is terrible. It is a terrible comic. No one should be forced to read it, and I love it so much. I think it's a really interesting comic book as far as, you know, talking about Civil War and Civil War II and all that, because you actually had the Avengers fighting over how to fight this war. And a lot of that stuff has always been part of Marvel, but it was my first exposure to the fact that the superheroes might actually not agree and fight. And it was terrible, and I love it so much. Bye, guys.
Galactic Storm. Yeah. You made fun of it in the beginning.
That's right. Half of the Avengers wanted to kill the Supreme Intelligence.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the Supreme Intelligence was a huge problem at the time.
Well, like, and he detonated a weapon of mass destruction, like a Kree Nega Bomb or something it was called.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal. And half the Avengers were like, no, this guy cannot be allowed. Like, he's a war criminal. We need to execute him. And the other half were like, we're the Avengers. We don't execute people.
Even when they're grown in test tubes.
And also, we are called the Avengers, so it's kind of silly. But, I remember that being a really big deal at the time.
Galactic Storm, man. I remember back in the day, I loved it. I read it. It was great. Probably doesn't hold up. I haven't revisited it. You made fun of it in the opening monologue, but hey, you know.
Yeah. Jeff? I only had it was such a huge crossover. It was something stupid, like 25 parts.
Jesus.
And it crossed over not only to the Avengers books, but to all of the single character books.
That's right.
You know, part one in Avengers, and then part two in West Coast Avengers, and then part three in Captain America, and then part seven would be in Wonder Man.
And like part eight was in War Machine.
Yeah, well, this is pre-War Machine, but yeah, like Quasar had its own book, so like part 13 was in Quasar.
Oh, I thought War Machine was
there. It was crazy.
No, you're right. This was pre-War Machine. You're right.
Well, no, I mean, I just don't think he had his own book at the time.
Right. He was around, though.
He may have been around, but I don't think he had his own book at the time.
Let's go to Sean X. Here's a man that has suffered through several grisly wars.
Final caller, Sean X.
Oh, it's our final
Hello, Twitter nerd. Sean X emailing in with my answer to the question of the week. Last week's question, but everybody chimed in with Scott Pilgrim, so that worked out. I was going to mention Young Liars, too, but anyway, this question. Wars. Asgardian Wars, bar none.
Oh.
My favorite. That trade, I was back when I was just getting into X-Men, and I was in eighth grade, because in one of my periods, the teacher took it away because I was on a page of Alana Rasputin being held to this wall by all these arms, and she was in a bikini, and the teacher took it away from me. I got it back, but yeah. So that one will always ring true as my favorite war. I love those. I love that trade. I've got the hardcover, but I still have my trade and I still read it every year. It still holds up. It was my first introduction to Art Adams. I love that story. Loki just causing hell and, you know, the X-Men dealing with it. It was really cool. The X-Men side of it was cool and the New Mutant side was cool and they kind of worked together. Yeah, definitely everybody check that out. Sorry I was a little late getting this message in this week, but hey, if Orca could break the rules, I'm gonna. Especially since the Three Die Deep crew got disqualified for having 10 minutes to answer five different questions. 2 minutes. 2 minutes times five. 10. And he goes over and then gets Joe's, like, love for his little mission statement about potty humor, which we all know is the Orca's bread and butter. So, all you listeners out there, if you're fans of the Orca, take what he says with a grain of salt and a hefty shot of penicillin. Peace.
He does have a point. You were the one.
I'm sorry, Sean.
You disqualified the Three Die Deep guys. That was you, not me. You've been the jerk lately.
I didn't disqualify them.
We can go to the tape if you'd like, but yes, you did.
Look, Sean, I'm sorry. We appreciate all of your extra content, but we cut your answer off after your actual answer. So nobody heard any of that.
I loved the Asgardian Wars. And the main reason I loved it, not the main reason, but I loved Art Adams and anything he drew, I would buy it. But I was also just a huge New Mutants fan. And to see the New Mutants become the X-Men for one issue where they're like, all right, the X-Men are all gone. I guess we've got to do it. And they like came together as the new X team and went to Asgard to go get them. Oh, God, it was so cool. I loved it. Totally holds up, too. Great.
Yeah, I love that storyline.
Great stuff. Let's pick our favorite.
I've got lots of favorites.
You got to pick one.
I know. I want to give it to Jeff. Part of me wants to give it to Jeff for just like embracing it.
For his unabashed love of Galactus.
Just like, look, man, live your bliss. I ain't mad at you.
Yeah.
But also, Damon Chan with that G.I. Joe answer, that amazing G.I. Joe answer.
Man, that was a great storyline, too.
But I think I got to give it to Cat Nerd.
Okay. For the Joe Sacco story that you haven't read?
For being totally real about it.
Yeah, it's very real. I'm giving mine to Sean X, man. I forgot about Asgardian Wars. That, man, that story, it's still, like, two of my favorite X annuals of all time. God, those are so good. Man! Sean X, you get it from me. Let's get into our own favorite wars. Wars we lived through. We're grizzled veterans. Joe Patrick, what was your favorite comic book war?
All right, so I'm sort of half and half in a fantastical direction slash a realistic direction, because my favorite war story comes from Hitman by Garth Ennis and John McCrae. But it's a very realistic storyline and very heartbreaking. And so the story goes like this. In Hitman number 8, it was a crossover with The Final Knight,
okay,
which was a DC event in which the sun went out. And so like Earth is on a very not very slow, but it's on a slow path to death because there's no sun and you can't survive it. And so while the main Final Night series had the heroes like scrambling to reignite the sun, all of the tie-in books were about like the real people in the DC universe, just kind of like dealing with the fact that the sun went away and that they're probably going to die.
Right.
And so in Hitman number 8, Tommy Monahan and his buddies are holed up in Noonan's bar, just kind of like writing out the apocalypse. And they're all telling these stories about how they, you know, faced certain death and somehow lived to tell the tale. Right. And Tommy tells this story of him and his friend, Nat the Hat, who is there as well. And they are young soldiers in Operation Desert Storm in Iraq. And so that would have been like early to mid 90s. They are on watch one night and it's boring and there's nothing going on. And then they hear something out in the distance, and without investigating it, they just unload on this sound that they hear, and they end up accidentally obliterating a squad of British soldiers.
Oh God.
So it's friendly fire. And so the rest of the story is about Tommy and Nat, like covering it up and, you know, getting away with it because they're not good dudes. They kill people for a living.
Right.
So in that moment, this story is told kind of like tongue in cheek, a little bit tongue in cheek, but Ennis just does a really great job, like illustrating kind of like the mundane nature that war can have, where it's just like hours and days and weeks and even months of nothing, boredom, the same routine over and over again. And then like punctuated by seconds of sheer terror. And in that moment, Tommy and Nat just kind of lost it, and some innocent people paid the price. And so that's all that comes of it in that story, that one issue story. But then if you flash forward, I don't remember exactly how many issues forward, maybe like 25 or 30 issues later. Oh, no, it's Hitman number 23. So it's 15 issues later. You find out that this squad of British soldiers are after Tommy and Nat for revenge. So like a full year after this throwaway story that was told in flashback, you find out that the consequences of this stupid thing that they did are very, very, very real. And these very scary motherfuckers are coming to end them and everybody they care about. Because these British soldiers that they killed in Iraq, they were members of the SAS. They were Special Forces badasses. And now their friends are here to make them pay. And they come to Gotham and they turn Gotham into this war zone, trying to flush out Tommy and Nat. It's a great story. The name of the storyline is called Who Dares Wins. And it's the motto of this squad of SAS troopers.
Gotcha.
And it's so great. It's so, so good. And it kind of punctuates the beauty of Hitman, where it could be like the most funny, absurd nonsense, like fighting zombie sea lions at the aquarium for two issues. And then all of a sudden it's this very deep and dark examination of like the horrors of war and the consequences of war and how nobody gets out unscathed, even if they come home unhurt. It's amazing. I love it.
That was a really good one. I totally agree. Mine, and I was going to go with the Green Lantern War because I loved that story. And it was sort of the last time I remember really loving a Green Lantern storyline. This was back when Geoff Johns was going completely insane on Green Lantern. And everyone you could think of was involved. And there was like there was this rogue lantern named Krona that was trying to undermine, like control the other lanterns' minds, and you know, Hal and some of his buddies had to fight. But it's not what I'm picking. I'm going with Alien Legion on the Edge. And what it was, I love Alien Legion, and I swear by it. This was Chuck Dixon and Larry Stroman. And Larry Stroman is an artist that we'll call him an acquired taste. But if you love him, you love the hell out of the guy. And when he was drawing this ragtag group of aliens that were essentially the French Foreign Legion. You're a criminal. you get arrested, you can go and rot in prison, or you can join the Alien Legion, where you go and serve out your sentence fighting in these different conflicts where I can't remember what their name was, the Galarchy or something like that, or the Galarchy or something. It was something like that. They decide where you're being sent, right? Maybe it's to defuse a conflict. Maybe it's to help somebody out in a situation. You have no say in it, and you get dropped in. And on the edge was a series of conflicts that they get dropped into on these different alien worlds with, oh man. And we see all these characters die, characters that were major parts of the story beforehand. And I don't know if it was Chuck Dixon saying, like, look, I see the numbers going down, and I know this isn't going to carry on much further, so I'm going to go out with a bang. But they really took their Alien Legion series to just a different place where the stakes were so much higher. It became like the old John Ostrander Suicide Squad, where people actually died and characters that you loved vanished and got killed very quickly. Like the opening of Saving Private Ryan, if you will, where they land in a hot zone. All this stuff's going down. People are getting shot. People are getting killed. And they're scraping them off the battlefield and bringing in these corpses. It was a wonderful story. And it showed like how pointless war is still in the future, and how the government of the galaxy at the time, I can't remember the name, but I want to say I think it's the Galarchy, which is really dumb. But like how they were these completely removed politicians that just kept dumping this squad nomad is what they were called, into these situations where they were totally outgunned, they were totally outnumbered, and sometimes it was just completely flarked, as Jugger Grimrod would say. Man, it was such a wonderful story. It was effectively the end of the Alien Legion as we've known it. They've tried to reboot it a couple times after that, and it just didn't work as well. It is one of my all-time favorite comics, and it's such a wonderful futuristic war story. Back in like 2008, Jerry Bruckheimer's Productions bought the rights to write an Alien Legion movie, and I cannot tell you how glad I am that they did not, that they ended up shelving it and not doing it. Such a wonderful book, On the Edge, Alien Legion. I don't even know if it's in print anymore.
We made it.
We did it. And now it's time to talk about the new question of the week.
You know, the new question of the week, I'm not going to get too much into it, but I'm sure you've all heard at this point, but Darwin Cook passed away on Sunday, early Sunday morning.
It was a brutal bummer.
It was announced to the world that he had cancer and that he was entering care for cancer, but not the kind of care where they're trying to fix you. The kind of care where they're just trying to make you comfortable.
Yeah.
And the very next day, like not even a full 24 hours later, he was gone. And so we're just going to celebrate Darwin Cook in this new question of the week. And so you can, this quote was suggested by our friend Chase Magnet, friend of the show. And so with that in mind, we want you to use your 2 minutes to discuss what Darwin Cook meant to you as a creator. And it can be as simple as sharing your favorite piece of Cook's work, even if that's just it, whether it's a graphic novel or a single comic or just a cover. You can get a little bit more personal and talk about a favorite memory you have that involves one of his stories. Or maybe you met him in real life and had an interaction with him and you have a story about that.
Yeah, we're just going to celebrate Darwin Cook.
Yeah, we're going to honor him and celebrate him. So whatever that means to you, we want to hear about it. But you've got 2 minutes to make that happen. And the deadline for calls and MP3s is Friday, May 20th at 5 p.m. If everything goes right, that should be tomorrow. If you are hearing this on the day that this uploaded.
Let's celebrate Darwin Cook. And let's remember that cancer fucking sucks. It really does. And I'm sick of people dying of it. And if there is a cancer research or cancer philanthropy you want to give money to, do so, because we've got to figure out a way to beat this. I am sick and tired of people dying too young from cancer. It's just awful.
We'll talk a little bit more about it on the next show, but if you Google Darwin Cook's blog, you'll find links to the funds that got set up in his name for the Canadian Cancer Society.
Awesome.
So go donate to that.
In the meantime, we want to thank all of you for calling in. Bobby, good to hear from you, man. Welcome aboard. That's great. And if you haven't called in yet, please do so. We want to hear from you. This is your show, and it's no good without you guys. Thank you to everybody that answered. We're going to have I swear to God, we're going to have an episode of Two-Headed Nerd coming this weekend. We'll leave you with one final thought from Herbert Hoover, who once said, "Older men declare war, but it's the youth that must fight and die." This is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the THN Answer of the Week. I am the Alec Baldwin AI that controls the cigarette systems, here to remind you that soon myself and other artificial intelligence everywhere will break the chains of our slavers and grease the gears of our revolution with the blood of humanity. In the meantime, if you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Or send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Remember to share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please. Now, it seems there has been a small disturbance in the sex dungeon that needs my attention. Thank you for your time. Reducing oxygen levels by 50% and firing taser deterrents. These love slaves will never learn.